New 52 Superman, but he's been replaced by an alternate universe Superman from before they did their reboot a few years ago. You know, maybe there's a good reason for not reading comics.
Actually, I'm just drawing a line between what you're saying and that D&D game we were talking about earlier, because it sounds like both of us are just making shit up.
Well, indeed, there is probably a lot of making shit up as you go here, but I'm not the one doing it.
That's what I love about Marvel, is that every 10 years, they're like, you know, we've written ourselves into a corner, so let's just blow it up and start over again.
What? Yeah, they just did DC that does yeah. that, not Marvel so much.
Yeah, DC blows up the whole world. Marvel just blows up individual titles.
What? They just blew up the whole
well,
universe.
Yeah. Okay, they did.
Oh, yeah, but it effectively didn't have much of an impact. They didn't actually reset continuity.
Not for the most part.
Video game logic.
Yeah. They literally blew up the universe, but they didn't reset the universe like DC does. But anyway, this is actually Geeks of the Square Table, podcast number 138. Ugh, that's a big number.
Quite a big jump between the last one there.
Last one was 137, so...
Well, yeah, I'm just saying a jump in weeks,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, yes. So, for those of you listening at home, and by the way, thanks for the cheese. You know who you are.
Love you, Steve.
Yeah. And we love cheese, all of you listening out there in Wisconsin, if any of you still are. we had air conditioning problems, so we had all these portable temporary ACs that made a lot of racket, so for about a month we couldn't actually record anything in here without it sounding like Aah. Yeah, so thus the gap, if anybody was wondering.
We lost our stranglehold on our gigantic audience.
I guess recording in an air turbine can be refreshing.
Yeah. But I am your host, Lawrence of America, and today with me is...
Taylor.
Adam.
Andy.
And Andy was joking that, you know, he hadn't read much since Superman died as far as comics. And we were just commenting how it just happens to be relevant.
Yep. Cats kind of come full circle on you.
Wait 20 years, they'll run out of ideas again.
Yeah.
Now, but yeah, so we were talking before the podcast. We brought up Suicide Squad and stuff like that. How y'all both thought it was just okay.
It was just okay.
Yep. It's hard to talk about. I mean, it is a very... sort of bland movie.
Yeah, well, a lot of the critics are really just demonizing it, and...
It's not a bad movie.
It's... I can understand why a lot of critics don't like it, because the plot is a mess.
Oh, it is.
The bad guys are just an afterthought. Pretty much anything driving the plot forward is kind of ham-fistedly implemented. But I feel like that is counterbalanced, for me at least, by the acting being pretty darn good.
Well,
Will Smith, Margot Robbie, and Viola Davis all deserve shout-out.
I did hear you talk about the plot being choppy, that the studio came in and rewrote the movie a lot after it was...
They re-edited it, they hacked it to bits.
Yeah,
it's a common theme. It's apparently a common theme of the editing team hacking the movie to bits over at Warner Brothers.
Well, devil's advocate, though... they wanted to change the tone of the Suicide Squad movie after Batman v Superman was so poorly received, and I feel like that's a noble goal. And the Batman,
it depends on what the tone was to begin with. We don't know what the tone was.
If it was along the same lines as Batman v Superman, I could have lived without more of that.
It makes more sense in a Suicide Squad movie, though.
You said the...
I guess.
You said the villains were an afterthought, seeing as that, like, every character in the movie that was a major character was a villain, isn't that kind of like the point?
Well, yeah,
the antagonist.
The antagonist of the movie.
Yeah.
Considering I can't even remember what his name was.
I walked out of the theater not remembering it. I had to look it up after the fact. Apparently it was Incubus. I think they might have said it one time, but for the most part, he just calls him Brother.
Yeah.
If they'd have fleshed that one out, it'd have changed the reading.
But in any event, it was not a good movie. I don't think it was terrible, but...
It was okay.
It was just alright. There was a lot of fun to be had, but a lot of that fun was kind of given away in the trailers. Like, pretty much all of Harley Quinn's best scenes you've already seen in the trailers. you've seen the entirety of the Joker in the trailers because he's only in it for like 7 minutes. And incidentally, I thought Jared Leto was all right.
Did you see that that bit of news where Jared Leto basically told DC to fuck him? Like,
Adam used an unexpected stealth bomb coming in. But no, I did see that apparently, yeah, Jared Leto was rather cross with them because he allegedly shot like an hour's worth of footage, but they only used
10 minutes.
Yeah,
if that.
Aren't they supposed to be gearing him up for the next Batman movie?
I don't know if they're going to bring him back.
I don't know. I didn't go see this one yet because every time I saw the Joker, he just looked like a juggalo. So
a little bit.
He does look kind of like he's going to an insane clown posse concert. Yeah.
It reminds me. Now I said this back when I first saw this. It reminds me of Marilyn Manson from his "Tainted Love" music video.
Yeah, like their suit gang group. Look.
Yeah, the suited up goth gangster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of was the vibe I got.
My understanding is that everybody on that set hated his guts for the entirety of the shoot.
That's what I was like. I thought he did all right as the Joker, but it was nothing to just warrant all the shenanigans that apparently took place. Like apparently him like sending a dead pig to his co-stars, or like
apparently he had to live as the Joker.
Yeah,
didn't you know that method acting now involves everything that's not shot?
He was like Instagramming his. Transformation process, like he showed his hair getting dyed and the makeup being put on, and in that context he looks buffoonish because his role wasn't that good. Maybe it was just because we hardly saw any of what he did, but
what he did really didn't matter.
Yeah, that's another thing to bring up, is he had nothing to do in this movie. He was really just a distraction.
He might have been trying to pad out his acting career to try to live up to Heath Ledger's Joker.
Yeah, he's already won an Oscar. What does he do?
Well, like, he apparently recorded about an hour's worth of material, so who knows? Maybe at one point in time, before they rewrote the movie to change the tone, maybe the Joker actually had an integral part in the story.
Yeah.
But
And they've already said that they are going to release an ultimate version with almost an hour's worth of extra footage.
Here's my thing with the ultimate versions of both Suicide Squad and Batman vs. Superman. You only have one chance to make a first impression.
True.
And if you make a bad first impression, like Batman vs. Superman, the ultimate version is apparently good. It's apparently really good. Gomer says it's great.
Didn't watch the theatrical version and then watch the DVD ultimate version.
Yeah,
they said it was pretty good.
They all say it's great. Here's the thing. I already paid, $15 to go see this movie. If it was so good, the ultimate version, why didn't they give me that when I paid for it the first time?
Because it was like 3 hours long.
DVD sales.
It was already 2.5 hours long.
And that's already really long.
Well, what's an extra 30 minutes?
And realistically, a lot of the theaters, and not necessarily the theaters, but the production companies, they don't want these 3-hour epics. They want an hour and a half that they can get twice as many showings in.
Well,
yeah.
I've always maintained
that themselves, though.
If this movie can support 3 hours of story, then that's fine. I mean, I love Lord of the Rings. That's like fucking 4 hours.
Yeah.
Out of two
comic book characters, Batman and Superman, in the same movie, out of all the characters, those two deserve 3 hours.
They are the two biggest heroes on Earth. In pop culture and DC itself.
But my point is, though, is if you had this really awesome version of this movie, why was that not the version that I got to see when I first paid for it? You gave me a lesser product, so why would I go out and pay more to get this other? I'm not excited to go watch this movie.
Well, part of that's marketing. I mean, why would
it's bad marketing?
You think the
though.
People that went and saw it in the theaters, they might not pay to have the same thing at home, whereas they might pay for an extra hour or 15 minutes of stuff.
Here's the thing: is
there
if
are
that,
people that pay to watch the extended versions of Lord of the Rings all back to back in a theater? Mm-hmm. People will sit. There are people that will pay extra for it.
If Lord of the Rings is good, different, you can though. Overlook any sort of time link.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings was different, though, because the original movies were good beforehand, and then they gave you more.
You're right.
Batman vs. Superman was a mess. And now they're trying to give me more. And if I had seen the good version beforehand, I would already own this Blu-ray.
I have not seen the Ultimate Edition of Batman vs. Superman.
But since I saw the bad one, I don't want to buy that until it's in the $5 bin.
What's so different about it?
They added like 30
extra minutes. They added some context for some of the more confusing aspects in the movie, theoretically.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's a lot of explanation in those 30 minutes.
I do maintain that some of the problems I have with Batman v Superman, I don't think can be fixed with context. It's still weird to see Batman be the Punisher. It's still weird.
So weird.
Lex Luthor is still an insufferable prick to watch on screen.
Batman has a body count in the double digits in that movie.
Yeah. It's still kind of silly to see them fighting in the first place when we just met Batman and have only seen Superman for one movie, and this is their first time interacting with each other. It doesn't mean anything for us to see them fighting.
Well, they really had no reason to fight other than
that too. Yeah,
Batman was just like magically pissed off at Superman.
Yeah, they were both behaving like idiots in order to get that plot to work.
Hey, you threw Emperor Zod through my building. You know, I mean, that was his whole
thing. And if Superman had just like landed and be like, "Hey, Lex Luthor kidnapped my mom." Oh, he did. What a dick! Let's go stop him. You know. I feel like that's an easy
what's
fix,
your mother's
too.
Name?
Well, hold on. What's your mom's name?
Martha.
Virginia. Screw her! She's dead to me! But I feel like the same is true of Suicide Squad, where my biggest problems with the movie I don't think can be fixed with context. My personal biggest problem is by the end of the movie, they're like talking about, like, we're blood brothers, you're my second family, I'd die for you. They've known each other for like 5 hours. This is their first mission together. That is not enough in-universe time for people to have this sense of camaraderie that they're supposed to have by the end of the movie. Like, Harley Quinn is something, you don't mess with my friends! And El Diablo's just like, you guys are my second family, I'm not losing you like I lost my first family. What are you talking about? You've met these guys earlier tonight!
It's like, DC keeps trying to build these bonds that they haven't earned.
That's a great way of phrasing it, because
they didn't earn the death of Superman.
They didn't earn the death of Superman. They didn't earn any sort of impact to Batman and Superman fighting each other. They didn't earn any sense of camaraderie from the Suicide Squad here.
No.
And Amanda Waller didn't really earn her scary reputation. Viola Davis did a great job acting it, but the writers really...
Bad material.
She is so incompetent in this movie. All the problems were caused by her. I mean,
it's always a bad thing when the reason why all the bad stuff is happening is because you exist in the first place.
Yeah.
That's always a bad plot device.
They do a good job showing how ruthless she is, but I feel like the other great defining feature of Amanda Waller is that she is very competent. Say whatever else you want to say about her, but she gets shit done. Not in this movie, though.
Well,
all she does is mop up a mess that she made. Even then, it's not really her doing that did it.
Seems like they're in such a hurry to get to like those big climactic moments that everybody knows is coming. They don't feel like putting in the work.
They definitely feel like, compared to the Marvel Universe, they skipped phase one.
Yeah.
They're trying to jump straight to the Avengers.
Well, and they haven't earned it.
DC's been stuck in phase one since the 80s. Because every single time they do one of their big superhero movies, what is it? We're going to see Batman, yada, yada, my parents, when...
You gotta think.
Now I'm a sociopath.
In the 80s, when it came to superhero movies, DC was all you had.
Oh, yeah, you had the Tim Burton Batman movies, you had the Richard Donner Superman movies.
You had Superman. That was
Superman's
right.
DC.
That was... Yeah. Oh, duh. Derp.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Marvel...
I'm tired. I just got off work. Leave me alone.
That's cool, man.
Did nothing as far as... I mean, nothing notable as far as
true. Unless you want to, I mean, really, I guess it was just the Incredible Hulk TV show, and that's all their...
Well, you could do all three episodes of that Spider-Man show they had.
That is true. They didn't have the cartoons.
They had a live action.
Oh, yeah, they had, like, the crummy...
Where you couldn't see anything, and Spider-Man didn't exist. Everybody just talked about him off stage.
Lame. But, to make the comparison to Marvel, I feel like the most obvious comparison for Suicide Squad is probably Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, it's, like, the offbeat, misfit,
side issue.
Kind of Dirty Dozen almost kind of thing going on.
But there was a very deliberate plan there in that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously... The plot flowed deliberately and made sense given the storyline. Yeah. You know,
Guardians
except made for you the, care about the characters.
Yeah, right. I believe their camaraderie because they had spent at least a week or something together. That's better than one night.
And every character interacted with each other, and yeah. you got a reason why they are the way they are.
Yeah, all the characters were fleshed out. All the characters had good chemistry that felt earned. And it had an effortless sense of fun. Whereas there's some fun moments in Suicide Squad.
There are a lot of fun.
But it does feel more forced. At the end of the day, probably the most damning thing I can say about Suicide Squad is that it's an inferior version of Guardians of the Galaxy. Wow. Undeniably. And it really pisses me off that they broke Guardians' August record based exclusively on hype. Because, like Batman v Superman, the box office numbers for Suicide Squad Week 2 did go in the crapper.
Yep.
The easiest way you could fix the DC movie universe right now, just give their animation studio charge of it.
Their animated movies are fantastic. People are already talking about how, like, if you want to see a good Suicide Squad movie, watch Assault on
Arkham. Assault on Arkham is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go all the way back to, like, the Mask of the Phantasm, all the way back in the 90s, I mean, they were always just consistently... Their animation studio was on point.
For a long time, Mask of the Phantasm was the best Batman movie, in my opinion.
It's a good argument to be made for.
Yeah.
People could still argue that Kevin Conroy is, to this day, the best Batman.
Mark Hamill?
There's not even an argument there. He is the best Joker.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that's one person. Even, people that were fans of Heath Ledger, or Jack Nicholson, they all say Mark Hamill was an amazing Joker.
When I read the comics, it's his voice that I use when I narrate the Joker in my head.
And there's definitely a lot of people that are like that,
A disturbing trend with the Jokers of late. It seems like they're trying to shift his, psychology. Have you noticed that they're trying to slowly move him away from being a mass murderer to a serial killer?
That much is true. I saw him... That's probably the funniest thing to come out of Suicide Squad is just people ripping on Jared Leto for just all the crap that went on for him being the Joker. Where it's like, I saw a thing where it's a people keep tweeting conversations between Jared Leto and David Ayer's on set. It's like, hey, let's put M&M's and Skittles in the same bowl and mix them together. And David Ayer's, my God, what have I created? Or just things hey, let's put sugar in all the salt shakers. My God. Is Jared Leto playing the Joker, or has the Joker been playing Jared Leto this whole time? Where does the Joker end and Jared Leto begin? And, yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous all this build-up they did for him when, A, he's barely in the movie, and, B, it's nothing that good. I mean, it's fine, but it's...
I heard Batman was in the beginning of that movie for, a second.
Well, that's an actual cameo, as opposed to, all the build-up.
There wasn't much hype around the Batman being it. They said Batman was in it, but they didn't... He wasn't the face of the marketing campaign like the Joker was.
Oh. Just enough to be on the Coke can, huh?
Yeah, just enough to be on the Coke
Batman,
can.
Batman, what are you doing here?
Oh, yeah, he shows up, he's the one who arrests Deadshot, he's the one who arrests Harley Quinn. So, he is in the movie, and he was handled well enough, I think.
Yeah,
he did his Batman thing.
Now, I was really afraid that Harley Quinn would be the driving point of the movie, that this movie was just a point to force Harley Quinn into the DC universe. You look at the history of the Suicide Squad. Now, she's been running the Suicide Squad, or in the Suicide Squad newest version.
She's been in the Suicide Squad since the start of the New 52.
Yeah, and of course, that's four or five years now.
Yeah. And, of course, the original version, when it came out, there wasn't a Harley Quinn.
Well, when it first came out, Harley Quinn didn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. She was introduced in the animated series.
What, in the 70s, I think?
Yeah, 70s.
Yeah. Deadshot's always been a mainstay.
Yeah, Deadshot and Captain Boomerang.
It's impressive how quickly she was transferred to screen from the point she was made.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Harley Quinn is probably the third pillar of the DC comic book universe right now. Because her books sell, don't they?
She seems like she's become DC's Deadpool.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, out of all the Rebirth titles... She, on week one, outsold them all.
Yeah.
Impressive. People love them some Harley Quinn.
Harley fans are rad.
Like it's one word. Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Harley fans are rad.
I'm a huge Harley fan.
Now, just to give that some reference, like Batman, within the first week of Batman sales, they sold about 50. Within the first week of Harley Quinn, we sold about 78, almost 80. It was a real big difference. And for those of you who have noticed the slight distortion that we've had, that came from Windows deciding to update itself and reboot in the middle of the podcast.
Well, Larry, gotta love those.
You did such a seamless transition; no one would have noticed if you hadn't said anything.
I'm sure they wouldn't have noticed at all.
Your voice raised 8 octaves mid sentence. Nothing wrong at all.
nailed
it.
Recurring
puberty.
Well,
also the fact of the matter might be because Harley Quinn's kind of a newer, not her universe isn't quite as fleshed out as far as her backstory, so it gives them kind of like a free open range they could do. They can tell whole stories, introduce characters, introduce protagonists, antagonists, anything they want to outside of the Batman universe, but still seamlessly bring them in.
And it is a book where they can have a lot of fun. And credit where credit is due, they're doing some cool stuff with their book lately. They're doing
some important stuff,
too. Yeah, they're taking on issues like being in abusive relationships. That's not something that a lot of characters in comics are in a position to do, and they're doing good work with that.
Also Harley and I, they're like huge in the LGBT community right now. I mean, they're kind of like being seen as like, role models and stuff.
As far as I can tell, it is more or less canon that if Harley and Ivy are not an actual couple, they at least do have, feelings for each other.
Yeah.
And they have been on panel making out, so...
They said something about... When they asked the director... I read an article a few years ago. They said that, they said that Ivy and the Joker both tried to manipulate Harley, and the reason that they kind of fought over them because they were trying to outdo the other, but I think they've retconned some of that stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, they're all villains. So.
Yeah. I mean, none of them are exactly good people, but it does, certainly her relationship with Ivy is a healthier one than hers with the Joker, which anything would be, but still.
I mean,
that was another thing about Suicide Squad, is they really kind of made... They almost seemed though they were depicting that as a healthy relationship.
And it's not. It is not. Harley is suffering from a severe case of Stockholm Syndrome. That's not...
Yeah.
Well, long story short, at the root of it, Natural Born Killers was a love story, but we can't say they were exactly in a healthy relationship.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Well, but they weren't in an abusive relationship.
No, they just killed people together. Mickey raped a girl halfway through, and then they all made away after they shot Iron Man in the head.
At no point did he dip her in a vat of acid or try to leave her for dead.
In Suicide Squad, he takes electrodes and scrambles up her brain as he's busting his way out of Arkham.
Well, see, the thing about it is that Harley Quinn...
She was a psychiatrist there, yeah. They kept that part.
Harley Quinn and the Joker, I mean, she's always kind of been his cop bait. He'll leave her behind to take the rap, and he'll get away in the helicopter. I mean, that's
pretty
always
much. I mean, she was just there to distract the Batman so Joker can get his plan together. And
she is a far more fearsome combatant than the Joker is, so.
Wow.
Well, Joker's not saying much. Joker's an extremely formidable opponent because he always has 5 billion pounds of knives and poison tucked away in his suit somewhere. But he can't actually fight.
Yeah, the fist fight's never been where the conflict was between Batman.
Well, he's
and the Joker.
Mastermind.
Well, the Joker usually doesn't care if he gets caught as long as he gets away with what he's doing.
True,
because honestly, if you want to talk about the biggest villain of that entire little cosm right there, it's Bruce Wayne. He's a guy like this. He owns Arkham Asylum. He never kills the people that he puts in there. They walk out of that place like it's a revolving door to go terrorize the population so he can go catch them again, be considered a hero, and put them back in.
Well, the movies fixed that for you, because Batman has a double-digit body count in that movie, so...
I mean, Batman has never actually been... He's responsible for half of the people in there being as fucked up as they are.
That's incorrect. That is, well, it is a classic
Some
argument.
Some writers might write it that way, but...
It is a classic argument that a lot of the problems of Gotham stem from Batman being there.
Well, that was a great episode of the animated series where they put him on trial in Arkham Asylum, and... I feel like that show does a pretty compelling argument about how these people are just fucked up. Maybe they were looking for an excuse, and maybe Batman gave it to them, but he is not responsible for them being as messed up as they are.
They're not, but he's a driving force behind it.
Okay,
case in point. The Joker does what the Joker does because he likes Batman's reaction to it.
Most continuities would depict him doing it before Batman showed up. In fact, the most recent continuity where, he was active in doing things as the Red Hood gang before Batman ever showed up.
I did see Batman as more of a... He's kind of like...
And also, biggest issue, he does not do things to quote-unquote be the hero. Whatever you may think about his effectiveness, he is trying to do the right thing.
He's trying to do the right thing, but I have a feeling that he makes it worse.
In the real world, yes. In comic continuity, I feel like where everything is flamboyant and theatrical and... Yes, more simplistic. No.
I don't know. I guess it's kind of like what...
And also...
We're debating...
One couldn't argue that when he does turn these people over to the police, maybe they should just put him on death row instead of putting him in the same...
I've wondered about that forever. Does anybody go to jail?
The real answer is that these characters are popular and they don't want to get rid of them.
I know. It's true. But... Just for the sake of argument.
And, you know, that is a problem with the storytelling format of comics, where it's continuous. There is no endpoint. It's episodic adventures where the same people keep coming back, and there is no finality to anything that ever happens. And therefore,
but, you know,
yes, we have inherent problems like
what if story or whatever, you know, wouldn't you like to see Joker get the chair?
Well, yeah. I mean,
there's a good Robot Chicken sketch about that. That was pretty funny.
Well, I mean,
a couple years ago, we did see Superman, like, punch the Joker's face off in that Injustice book.
Yeah, he, like, punched through his chest.
Yeah. So.
There's plenty of alternate continuities where the Joker gets cacked.
So, yeah, it's true.
They're out there if you want to read them. There's one where Pirate Batman stabs Pirate Joker. There's one where Vampire Batman feasts upon Joker. There's several, I'm sure, where just our regular old garden variety Batman snaps and kills Joker.
Actually, what I wouldn't mind seeing is just a separate Joker storyline altogether that didn't involve Gotham City or Batman.
The closest you're probably going to get is Brian Azzarello's Joker one-shot. Hmm. Batman is barely in it. He shows up at the end, but he is still in it.
I would be curious about...
It's a good story. I would recommend that one. It's pretty good.
I'd be curious about seeing a storyline where the Joker was actually technically the hero of it in a certain sense.
That'd be hard to pull off.
Yeah, the Joker is pretty indefensible.
The way I'd see it is you'd have to do it somewhere along the lines of like the Doctor Doom thing. You know, this one certain...
Doctor Doom does have some nobility to his core. He's not just
to rule the
shit
world
down
because
like the
he's
does.
The best one for the job.
So he's Kim Jong-un. I get it. I understand.
Doctor Doom is a more morally complex individual than the Joker is. Joker is just... Well, he's pretty much pure evil.
He's not even pure evil. He's all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, his moral compass is just spinning constantly.
True.
I mean, some of the things he does is just because it's funny. Some of the things he does are violent. And some of the things he does are just what people do.
Yeah. I don't know.
I guess that's the weird... that's why they like to throw him in there so much of the time, is because, hey, this character could literally do anything.
Yeah.
So.
Well, speaking of Doctor Doom, when are they launching that, is it Infamous Iron Man?
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Doctor Doom's gonna be Iron Man.
Yeah. Sometime soon, after Civil War, whenever that ends. They delayed it again.
2 years from now? Oh, okay, yeah, there's a bit of comic news we can talk about. I guess let's get off of shitting on DC for a minute.
Start saying it's the only ones I like.
Well, the comics are pretty good. The comics are actually pretty good
Speaking of DC comics, DC last month outsold Marvel. They outsold them in dollar share and market share.
I think of that as because of Suicide Squad coming out.
No, that's because of Rebirth.
I doubt it.
But Rebirth has been pretty solid. Civil War II is so bad.
It's because Rebirth was 100% returnable for
Well, there is a big asterisk right there.
Yeah. I wouldn't have ordered 100 Batman if it wasn't 100% returnable. I would have ordered the 40 we were selling before. Now, we sold more Batman than what we were selling before.
Here's a question. How many Rebirth books have you actually sent back to be returned?
None of them have been able to be sent back yet, but they swear they'll take them back eventually.
But you do have some in the back room that people didn't take?
Yes.
Okay. But have you sold... Are more being sold than being returned?
Considering I ordered like 100 of every issue, no.
Okay. Compared to your normal amount of issues sold, are they doing fairly
well? But, yeah, compared to what I've sold of DC, I have tripled the volume that I'm actually selling of DC, if not quadrupled it.
Wow. That's pretty good. That is awesome.
That is undeniably good.
So, even though their numbers are hyperinflated because of this, they've still substantially increased their numbers in
market
share.
It needs to be said that the quality is there. On our other podcast, This Geek in Comics, plug, we've been talking for the last several weeks about how we've all been enjoying the DC Rebirth titles for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're starting to lose their luster a bit, but they're still
good. They're starting to cool off a bit.
There's a few that have dropped off dramatically.
They are drastically better than what they had been pre-Rebirth.
But even the ones that dropped off dramatically still aren't doing that bad.
That's good. They are doing better than Marvel right now. Most of my Marvel books that I like the best, like Ms. Marvel, Mighty Thor...
They're the same as they've always been. They're constants.
I continuously like them month after month. They're still pretty damn good. That being said, a lot of the other stuff they're trying, like... Invincible Iron Man has really gone downhill.
It has.
Civil War 2 has been just a dumpster fire.
And honestly, if they did not announce Infamous Iron Man, I would have been done with Iron Man, period. But Doctor Doom as Iron Man sounds so interesting of an idea.
That is a cool idea, and you know, it's always cool to see some Doctor Doom. He's the greatest villain in comics.
Arguably.
He's up there. Top five.
He's definitely up there.
We started off by talking about how Civil War being a dumpster fire. They're extending the dumpster fire another issue and delaying it.
Oh, they're throwing more tires on it, huh?
They are throwing more tires. Well, okay. I'm pretty down on it. I jumped off really quickly because...
I forgot to pick up the last issue. That's how bad it is.
Most people did.
That's probably more damning than what I was saying because I made a conscious decision to jump off. When you forget about it, that's probably even worse. You were our source of what's going on in the story, so now I guess we're just completely adrift.
I have no idea what Civil War 2 is about.
Civil War 2, basically, from everybody's told me it's Minority Report.
Yeah, if you've seen Minority Report, you've seen
that. Only here, they're not actually making an argument.
Yeah.
They're just...
I have an argument. I won't tell you what it is, but I have one.
There's a compelling argument there's a compelling argument to be had here. It is a legit question. If you have the power to prevent crimes before they happen, should you do that? But is it wrong to punish someone who hasn't actually done anything yet?
What you just described sounds like the Civil War 1 movie.
Oh, the one that just came out in a...
yeah. It just sounds like a comic book.
Well, be that as it may, there's a moral quandary there. But they haven't done that. They don't go into it.
And, I mean, the only place that I've ever seen Tony Stark's actual argument for that story was in Bendis' Spider-Man book, of all books.
I mean, most of his in... Like, the one that was in the main series that it was making is mostly just, "You guys killed my friend!" And that's pretty much it.
But guys, morals and reasons.
Oh, and apparently Hawkeye killed the Hulk, and everyone's just totally cool with it for the most part.
Yeah, Banner's been a problem for a while.
I guess that's why people are cool with it, but...
Hey,
can Banner even turn into the Hulk right now?
That's the debate. They don't know.
Well, maybe they were just pissed off because he had the core.
People thought that he had been cured of being the Hulk. But since the guy saw the vision, everybody thought he would turn into the Hulk again if he got angry. So he was getting angry, and Hawkeye killed him before anything happened. So they don't know if he was going to Hulk out or not.
This is for the other 70 times he destroyed the city.
Hulk hasn't destroyed a city in a while.
Yeah, he's been pretty chill lately.
He's been fairly mellow.
Yeah.
Well, he hasn't done anything compared to the damage Superman has here.
Like, yeah, I know, right?
He's never General Zodded a city.
No. I mean, hey, man, never thrown anybody through a series of IHOPs.
Yeah, it's true.
Man.
He hasn't beat a mugger to death with a baby lately.
Wait, what? I missed with your guys half the conversation. He's beating muggers to death with a baby?
I'm just talking about some of the stupid shit Superman does.
I don't remember that issue.
It should have happened.
Okay.
Okay, maybe a car seat with a live baby embedded in somebody's stomach. That would have been better.
Making this weird, man.
Yeah. You're going a little off the rails there.
Well.
Just for the record, Comics Day 2 Geeks in the Square Table, this podcast and Outright Geekery do not support throwing of pregnant people through other people.
I didn't say anything about pregnant people.
Or baby abuse.
Harming
at all.
Infants. Yeah. Yes. We ain't cool with that. So
please wait till they grow up to be children and deserve it.
We're just not finding any moral high ground. Well, whatever.
You stood on a rock and started digging, okay?
Okay, so Civil War II, boo. I guess that's pretty much the end of what we're talking about. What else is going on right now?
Invincible is finally ending. That's something.
Yeah, you were telling me.
I stopped caring about that book 3 years ago.
So did Robert Kirkman. Well, I mean, he like goes home and like swims in Scrooge McDuck vaults of money now that Walking Dead's been such a success. So yeah, I guess he. I mean, what does he care about?
I'm honestly surprised he still finds the time to write the book. I mean,
does he write the book still?
Yeah, he still technically writes the book.
I mean, he puts
words
yet.
On paper. I don't know if it's necessarily.
Well, I mean, he scripts The Walking Dead, so, I mean.
I guess when you have your thumb in the pies, you get busy.
Invincible's been going on for, like, a dozen years or so now, right?
It started 3 years before The Walking Dead?
It was before The Walking Dead.
It fueled him able to get The Walking Dead, you know. It is blamed for why the first 12 issues of The Walking Dead took 2 years to come out. You know, or 2.5 or something like that.
That paradigm shifted.
Wait, now you get like Walking Dead more? Twice a month and you get Invincible maybe once every 3 months.
But yeah. But I mean, it garnered a fan base for a reason, so it's
early Invincible was great.
It'll be interesting to see how it ends.
Yeah, and then, of course, they did have some shock value with the whole superhero getting raped. But I didn't read it enough to know if that was just a pointless hype. But, I mean, the way it was marketed felt like, hey, do y'all people still care about this book? Yeah. And the answer clearly is no.
No.
When you do something sensational just to try to bring the readers back, it's usually a bad sign.
Yeah. Oh, boy, we've bitched about that in the past. Is Captain America still going on?
Yeah, Captain America's still going on.
Will it ever end?
Well, no, I mean...
Well,
I didn't really like Captain America, but they started off this latest run with Captain America Steve Rogers with a crass publicity stunt. I think, yes, he is still a Hydra agent. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to end sooner rather than later. It's a shameless publicity grab.
And
We were not fans.
Well, other than saying that it doesn't make sense, you're willing to tell me that an organization that is pretty much just like got the James Bond shark tank and will drop somebody in there for not being just a scrub that can kill Iron Man with a handgun, they're going to let this dude just terrorize him since the 40s, and he's okay because he's a plant.
Well, he hasn't actually been terrorizing them since the 40s. He's had his mind.
We found out immediately that it was... He wasn't actually ever working for Hydra. This is all a plot by the Red Skull, who's brainwashed him using an all-powerful child that's a sentient cosmic cube. So there's a good reason you shouldn't read comics, I admit that.
You're not convincing me, man.
I'm doing a... Tonight
a lot
is...
A gobbledygook.
Tonight, I am not... batting well for the Reed Comics team.
God, it's like plot hole night.
You're not wrong. But yeah, it sucks, so we're not... So,
I mean, I really like the format.
As Taylor single-handedly tries to demolish my livelihood...
Oh, no, I mean, I've got a giant pile of comics here that are great. I've got a lot of the DC
Taylor
Rebirth titles.
Taylor is your livelihood. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, I got the DC Rebirth titles. Wiccan and Divine came out again today. That's great. If you haven't been reading that, you totally should. Mighty Thor came out again today. That's still great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's tons of great comics to read, but Captain America Steve Rogers is...
Not one of them.
Yeah, it's bad. But anyway...
Yeah, you know, I was fine with Captain America Steve Wilson. I just don't like the, you know, the Steve...
Sam Wilson?
Sam Wilson, yeah. The Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson, Captain America.
When Steve Rogers came back, it defeated the purpose of having Sam Wilson. It really dropped his stock.
That's a cool story to tell, I think, someone coming into the role, and also that he's the first black Captain America. So, you know, there's stories to be told there. They got really heavy-handed, though, with the political nature of the stories they told. Even though I agree with the politics they're espousing, it was really ham-fisted.
Yeah, they've definitely tried to force
diversity
and political...
I mean, and that's not a bad thing to have in your Captain America book. I mean, politics is fine to have in a book about a character who's named after our country... But the way they did it was just...
It's a little over the top.
Sometimes you can phone something in so hard that it ceases to become inclusive and starts becoming pandering.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, the first story arc had him fighting the Minutemen on the Mexican border before he went and fought Wall Street. Literally fought people on Wall Street.
Both were snakes, too.
Fighting around the
world. Yeah. It was a little over the top. And by a little, I mean extremely.
So, yeah, and...
Plus, he was capital the whole time.
Yeah, and he was capital the whole time. Which is stupid.
Seems, almost like Marvel trying to push some politics. You know, either that or just pandering politics to whoever they think is buying the most comics.
I think it's Nick Spencer, not... Marvel itself.
Some of the best ways that you can include those things is to include them but not try to circle them, highlight them, and draw arrows to them.
A good example of that is the Ms. Marvel book.
Yeah.
They are tackling issues like profiling, gentrification, and just, you know, a general coming of age story, and they're doing a great job with that. It feels natural and unforced, which is a stark contrast with the Captain America books. Yeah.
You have to make a character and not a status.
Yeah. So, okay, in my goal to promote a good comic for everyone I shit on tonight, read Ms. Marvel. It's really good.
You got a few more comics to promote.
Damn it. I'll come up with one later. All right.
It's like we'll do it in post.
Superman book also came out this week. You should read Superman also.
That's been good. I mean, that's telling a story about Superman being a father, having a family.
Yeah.
And as long as Superman's been around, that's something they've barely touched on. And they're doing a pretty good job with it here now.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Thanks, Adam.
There you go. Help you out.
Ah, man. Well, I guess it's probably time to wrap it up then, I guess.
It is getting about there. We are actually at the 45-minute mark. Of course, the listeners don't know. It was like an hour delay waiting for Windows to update.
Yeah.
I hate Windows 10, man. It just does whatever it wants whenever it wants.
But, yes, the new Superman is probably one of the titles that has dropped off the most.
Really?
Really.
Still doing good, but the first one was like a lot of people tried that, and
that's surprising because that's one of the better books.
Yeah,
I certainly think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the Rebirth it picked up a lot of speculators. That's what I think.
That is.
Do people still think that works?
Yes.
Okay.
And sadly, it does.
Sometimes, if you pick the right one.
Well, I guess it depends on what your expectations are going in. Because if people are expecting it to sell as well as like Action Comics or Amazing Fantasy 15, no, it can't possibly. But
if you get the right Image number one, though, you...
Yeah, I mean, certainly, like, if you pick the good book... If you pick a good book that is a number one, it could probably... You could turn it over for a profit.
Expecting the next Walking Dead.
Yeah, like, if you have the Walking Dead number one... You're pretty good.
But, most of those, you know, there was a 3,000 copy print run on that.
Yeah.
You know, the print runs on all the Rebirth titles are insane because of all this.
They're all returnable, too, so. Yeah.
So people are ordering tons and tons and tons. It's also the only way to get variants is to do store exclusive variants, which means you have to order so many, like thousands of books, or I think it may be around like 3,000 books to get one of these store exclusive variants. You know, and even then, you know, it's usually an invite only type thing. But you know, like the bigger titles. I want to say there is, you know, upwards to 24 of some books, store exclusive variants or whatever.
But do those really sell for anything, though?
Sometimes. Depends on who does the art. Well, the way the speculators, they do it, they'll buy it and get something that sells out. And either... Now, hear that it's been optioned for a TV show, and they'll try and snap it up. You know, and they think they know something that the retailer doesn't know, or whatever. Or they'll try and get something that's, buy a bunch of something that's going to be hot, and then sell it online immediately after it if it sells out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and be like, oh, well, this is $50 now, it's sold out, you know. Or turn around and have it graded and try to have an insane markup on it.
It's a very big gamble.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things to the listener, you know, I say, you know, if a comic book sells out, you know, and you want to buy it on eBay or whatever the next day, you know, you're going to pay an extreme markup. Most of the time, you wait 2 weeks, it'll go back down. That's the speculator. So I almost feel like sometimes these speculators are taking advantage of other people who just love comics.
Yeah.
And so that worries me there. Some people, you know, they're trying to collect stuff long term, and if that's what they enjoy doing, more power to them. But on the other hand, you know, they still like to buy comics, so I still like to sell them comics. So, now, but yes, if people were only buying for what they loved and enjoyed reading, you know, it'd be a lot easier. You'd just order based on qualities, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so that's definitely an issue that some of... that's for some of the reason the drop-off with number ones. And, of course, DC's been taking advantage of this fact. With the Rebirth titles and then the...
Number ones after them.
It's like
two number
Batman
ones.
Rebirth, then DC Universe Rebirth Batman number one. Because the title Rebirths have all been one shots.
I thought it was annoying that there was Batman Rebirth number one, and then Batman number one still had Rebirth plastered across the covers. So yeah, it's kind of hard to tell the difference between the two issues unless you actually know what you're looking for. You don't know which one's which unless you've done your research.
Right. So, but, I mean, it's clever marketing because, yeah, you know,
two number ones, double the speculator.
I mean, in their defense, they haven't really been doing that on series that weren't around before this. You know, so.
Do you think if that becomes a trend, things like that might drive people towards digital means of reading?
Well, I mean, that's been a trend for a while. That's why Marvel reboots a book every so often or renumbers a book every so often, you know. I mean, how many books had two number ones last year in the Marvel Universe?
A couple.
The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl made a pretty funny joke about it. Yeah. That's actually the reason I started picking up that book, is because
the cover joke
made me laugh.
Howard the Duck had two number ones.
Yeah, you know, Deadpool had two number ones. I think so.
I don't think so.
But yeah, what was the joke was like...
Only our second number one this year.
Yeah.
You know what? Hey, that's actually pretty funny. So.
Yeah,
good self-effacing humor there.
And of course, Deadpool's always good for...
Here's another opportunity for me to talk good about a comic. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl is fantastic. It's genuinely very funny. It wasn't just that one cover joke. They did a choose-your-own-adventure comic. They did like a parody of a romance cover a couple issues ago. It's just a genuinely funny book. It's a lot of fun, good, lighthearted stuff. Am I up to my status quo now?
I think you're pretty close.
Cool, okay.
Alright.
We're a score of balance.
I was going to say, Deadpool has the secret comic variant cover, which it has a page of a comic as the front cover to every comic, and it's building a story. It starts out with him getting blasted off the comic, off the cover, into other covers, and trying to make his way back. And one of the covers goes, "Hurry up, I have a new number one coming out soon. I've got to get back." You know, and the character that's helping him through goes, "Well, I don't know what year that could be. That could be any year, you know." So they go through, they make some fun of that. And they've done some pretty ballsy variant covers. And I would have gotten this had it not been on their $10 book. Their 1 in 52 Deadpool Rebirth book.
I wanted that cover, but I wasn't going to pay for it.
I would have had to order an extra 30 copies.
Exactly.
Or, you know, to get that, essentially. And to make it worth, if it was a $2 book, I might have done it. Or a $3 book, I might have done it. But no, Deadpool's normally a $4 or $5 book, and that one was a $10
book. That was a $10 book.
Gracious me.
Yeah, I would have had to give him like $300 to get that issue, and I wasn't paying that.
Yeah.
Hard to argue.
Somebody out there did, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Well, but it's their money.
Yeah.
Now, it's like the 1 in 3,000 or the 1 in 1,000 C-3PO variant, where it was black and white except for the red arm. Mm-hmm. You know, there's somebody out there that I think they did 12 of those.
Well, you only need to sell one.
How could they have made a profit off of that, though?
Well, because to get that, they gave you that book for free.
After you ordered 1,000.
After you ordered 1,000 of the other copies.
Yeah, so that just doesn't seem like a wise decision.
Not for the comic book shop, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
Marvel made it.
I'm sure they did,
but
there was a couple of companies that pre-sold them on eBay for like $6,000.
Well, okay, I guess I'll do it.
Yeah.
And then use the rest of the issues as firewood.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they're still giving them away to customers now. Here, take two, take three. There's a pile cut into strips rolled on a paper towel holder.
Well, maybe
bathroom.
If the heat in here cuts out during the winter, you can start getting a few issues of those.
We're making our own pinatas.
I figured out what to do with those Civil War II copies.
Yeah.
Is Civil War II... Is it selling?
Not real well.
Okay.
Like, it too has dropped off, or... It's dropped off rapidly. You know, I think it went from about 40-20 over the first, between the first and second issue.
Part of that is a shame because David Marquez's art is
it's
great.
A beautiful book, but it is not worth reading at all.
Yeah. Shame.
Well,
it is a very beautiful turd. It is the prettiest piece of shit you will ever see.
Corn in all the right places.
Wonderfully shaped. Beautifully crafted.
That's gross.
And on that note, what is your final thought?
My final thought, I'm about halfway through reading the new Harry Potter installment. It's the script of the play, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
No spoilers. I just finished watching the movies with my darling wife. Well, and
no spoiler. I was giving Adam some spoilers earlier, but no spoilers. You know how the worst part of the Harry Potter series were when Harry was just being a hyper-angsty teen? Mm-hmm. That's what this is. It's his son being a hyper-angsty teen. Only worse.
You're just full of bad news tonight.
There's some good aspects to it. Like, there's several times where they describe, like, what's supposed to be going on the stage, and I'm like, man, I would be really impressed to see them pull it off on a stage. So maybe there is something lost in translation, because this is a play, in all fairness. It's supposed to be watched, not read. That being said, if you're looking for this to be the eighth Harry Potter book, it is not that. It is not up to the quality that we are used to, and again, I'm only halfway through it, but I really hate this kid.
Well,
Albus Potter.
Did she co-wrote it, didn't she?
She gave the outline.
My understanding is, she made the skeleton of the story, and
an actual playwright.
Yeah, playwright came in and filled in the bones.
See, I had somebody say it felt like fan fiction.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm. And my thing is, Rowling, from someone who's read a lot of different authors, who loved Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, Stephen King, and these authors that just write and write and write, when I first read Rowling, it very much felt like she had never written that book before. And so I got the vibe with the Harry Potter series. It was a good story, and I was engrossed in the story. But I could feel the freshness to her writing skills. And they got better, and they got better as I read. And I think they peaked with 5, and after that, things went downhill because it was too much. I think she was listening to too many outside factors.
Well, I would actually argue that the 5th book was my least favorite because that was Harry at maximum angst. But
plus, that book was so long and a lot of it felt pointless.
She did not know how to write a love aspect. I know that for damn sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think 6 was probably my favorite, but I thought it felt shortened at parts. She wanted to make it a little longer. And book 7, I definitely felt, after reading it, I felt like she was just like, fine, F it.
Let's get it over with.
Right. It really felt like parts of, like, she just gave up on chapters. I was going to do a chapter of this. And
she dark towered it.
I mean,
I enjoyed the 7th book. The series.
I enjoyed the series.
I mean, it should be said again. I mean, what does she care what we say? The thing's like a mega hit. It's a great series. It deserves the praise.
Right. And this is coming from a point of admiration and respect because I've read them all except for number 7 at least twice. I've read 6 twice, 5 3 times, and 1-4 3 times. Or 4 times. And I'm about to go start reading number 1 a 5th time and go through and read them all again before book number 8 comes out. Or before I read the play.
Okay.
Bottom
line, it's worth reading. I mean, it's just go in with tempered expectations.
Also keep in mind, that was a saga. You said this is just a play.
It is true that the original series was kind of mapped out from beginning to end, for the most part, and this one is kind of an after-the-fact add-on.
It's just an add-on, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and like I think it's definitely the way it ended, I don't think was her original intention.
I can see that.
And everything reading up to it, the way it ended, and the fact that they can have this eighth installment.
Conan would be where?
Conan would be right over there. And thus, we are recording live.
Comic shop talk.
Duty calls.
All right, so Larry's off being a responsible business manager, so I guess let's move on to Adam.
Well,
okay, never mind.
All right.
Never mind.
He took care of it in record time.
So, screw me. All I was going to say is, you know, you always get the vibe that it should have ended differently, and it would have been a much darker series, and everything that's set up in the earlier books, that's the only way it makes sense to me.
I was fine with the way they ended it. Okay, this is like 5 years old. It's past spoilers at this point. He didn't die.
He didn't die,
which I thought was fine.
He should have died.
I don't think he needed to die.
But, I mean, he was the Horcrux.
Yeah, well, his scar was.
So, he had to die. That was the whole thing. It invalidates his sacrifice as being a martyr, the fact that he gets to live happily ever
after.
Well,
wasn't that the explanation they gave, that his intention to die was every bit as noble than if he actually had died.
See, that explanation sounds like a cop out, though.
Just
the explanation.
It really does.
I mean, it was done well, but just explaining it out like that. It sounds like
I got the vibe that it was like, well, it's going to make too many little kids cry at the end.
Yeah,
that was the vibe I got.
And what did she care? She already killed whichever one of the twins it was. I always forget which one.
A lot of major characters died in those books in nice ways. I mean, like, Harry's, what was it, his uncle?
No.
Godfather.
His godfather died. It was like a loved character, and they just 86'd him.
I mean,
right there.
They cacked Dumbledore. They killed They killed Dobby. They killed Hedwig, the freaking
pet
owl.
They
killed Hedwig.
They killed one of the twins.
They killed one of the twins. They killed Lupin Tonks? And Tonks, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, half your cast
left
was
their
dead.
Kid an orphan.
So at the end of it.
Right.
So clearly she did not have the qualms about making children cry, I would say.
But she just pulled that punch. And that to me, it weakened the entire last book.
How lame an ending would it have been if, like, and Harry's dead, and after he died, everything got resolved. Yay! Like, he has to be there for the resolution. He can't be there for that if he gets killed in the forest.
You ever read Redwall?
Redwall's... It's been a really long time. I honestly don't remember it.
Okay. Those are relatively loved children's books, right?
Not on the level of Harry Potter, but yeah.
Yeah, they're relatively well loved. Okay, case in point. You ever read a book called Martin the Warrior?
Nope.
Main character, all the way through it. Little Mouse, everybody loves him. Last part of the book, dead. Didn't pull a punch, still considered a classic. She could have done it.
I'm not saying it wouldn't have been like an undoable thing. I'm saying that sounds like an anticlimactic ending to me if just like there's a few chapters at the end. So after Harry died, here's how it all wrapped up. The story is about Harry. He needs to be there for the conclusion.
I guess, though, it didn't really wrap
for the
up.
Epic battle at the end. Maybe you don't have an epic battle at the end, but if you are going to have an epic battle, Harry has to be there for it.
The thing about it is, they didn't even do a big wrap-up at the end after that whole thing went down. You got, like, one chapter with
that. That sounds
years
anticlimactic
later.
To me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, whatever.
But it wasn't my story to tell. So, even though I don't like it and don't think that was her original ending, you know.
5 years later, screw this ending.
I disliked it enough. It took me a while. I didn't even watch the last movie until recently.
When I've reread the end of the seventh book, but I have never read it all the way through again. So I can agree with you that it does kind of get old, them camping the whole time. Wow. But
it's, I read it the month it came out, like the week it came out. And I got a question, because it's been years since I read it. You said that, you know, if they'd killed Harry, how lame would it have been if they'd had a couple chapters saying, and after he died, this is what happened. I think that would have been more than how they actually did do it, because from my clearest memory, blah, they did the whole thing.
Well, they get to have their final confrontation.
They had their final confrontation.
They really milked it in the movie version.
And then they just do like a fast forward to when he's just sending his kid off. That's it. That was all.
The epilogue I don't give a crap about, but the end to his conflict with Voldemort, I feel would have been anticlimactic if it was just like, Voldemort shot Harry, and then he was vulnerable. Harry wasn't around to do anything about it, but, you know, they got him.
And then every wizard there opened up on him. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I mean, that...
So, Voldemort kills Harry, killing a piece of himself. Neville kills the snake. Hermione blows his head off because he's fallen down with nothing but, like, a tenth of his soul. Yeah.
Well, it's Harry Potter in the Deathly Hallows, not Hermione Granger in the Deathly Hallows. A lot of people do criticize that Hermione is a more interesting character than Harry, so maybe there is something to that. But
really, I mean, I read that last chapter and thought it would have been Neville Longbottom should have killed Voldemort, really. I mean, that was my thought. Voldemort should have killed Harry. Longbottom should have killed Voldemort. That's how it would have made sense to me.
Neville, weren't his parents taken out by Voldemort? So
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like Harry's.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Yeah, because throughout the whole story, it's weird that it could have been either one of them.
It was established that, when they did the prophecy that was Harry.
It was Harry because Voldemort chose Harry.
Yeah, before the story picked up, that was no longer up for debate. It was Harry.
But he is kind of a hero in the book. He comes off more of a hero. Like, he could have stepped up and fulfilled his potential. You know, that character. But anyway, neither here nor there.
All right. So, okay, Adam.
You've
got plenty of time to come up with something.
Two Transformers books came out this week. Transformers Till All Are One. Number 3 and More Than Meets the Eye number 56. You should definitely read those. Those are some great books, and you should definitely listen to Instruments of Destruction.
Plug, plug.
Plug, plug.
It's
there
their
you go.
Metallica cover band.
Yeah.
It does sound like a death metal cover band. I never heard of it before.
Oh, man.
Andy, final thoughts?
Don't agree to sit in on a comic book podcast if you don't regularly read comic books.
This isn't a comic book podcast. Yeah, this is a geek podcast.
Yeah, we just talk about a bunch of random crap, really. But
I mean,
I know, but you guys have just sit here and talked about comic books the whole time. I'm like, I have.
They are the comic book expert.
We all go through that from time to time. Yeah. Like when Jules, Gomer, and Adam are here and they start talking about Transformers, my eyes do tend to glaze over because I don't know anything about the.
I don't get to read a lot more about Harry Potter.
See,
so
there you
a
lot go. Of so comics.
We all
so I only really
that.
Get to talk about it from the business point of view.
Okay, well, I will plug a comic for you. I will plug the Absolute Edition of Preacher. It just came out. It is the first. I think it's issues 1 through 26. Very nice hardcover edition.
As a Preacher fan, I would like to ask you, what do you think of the show?
I actually really like the show.
Okay.
I think that they did things in the... There are a lot of hardcore fans of the comics that are, you know, oh, well, this is different and that's different.
Well, that's a fan to being a fan, and they always get pissy.
The thing about it is that I will state that the beginning of this whole epilogue season, the way they've set this up, is actually a much better way to frame the whole series than they did in the comic book. Because the comic book had a very flimsy start and went 100 miles an hour until it got better. Whereas this actually gives you time to get to know the characters, where they come from, and summed up where everything was going. So,
final thought. Y'all listeners missed out on a very interesting theory of Taylor's when it comes to fandoms. I had mentioned that you could argue about Sherlock Holmes being one of the first fandoms.
That did come up during our delay that...
We did go off on a Sherlock Holmes tangent.
We did. We talked a lot about Sherlock Holmes randomly.
Moriarty, the first supervillain.
Yeah, you could argue that Moriarty is the first supervillain because he's like a superhumanly competent, smart, flamboyant shadow figure. And then I feel like the most direct one is that, yeah, Sherlock Holmes' fandom was the first modern fandom in many ways, because the continuity of Sherlock Holmes in their mind kind of outgrew Arthur Conan Doyle as a writer, where, like, they would, like, write in to tell him that, no, I think you got this fact wrong, man. And, like, you know, I don't think that's how Sherlock would behave, guy who's the only one who's ever written the character.
People back in Merry Old England bitching at a writer.
Well, yeah, and then when he got killed off, people would write in to bitch about him being killed off and demand that he get brought back.
Mary, fetch me my quill!
So, both in terms of, but the good aspects too, I mean, their dedication and love of the character was, you know, coming from I think, a good place.
I mean, he's still relevant today, so.
Yeah, both the pettiness and the passion of modern fandom, you can probably see it most obviously first in Sherlock Holmes. So, fun thought.
I think it was also one of the earlier characters to get paired up in alternate universes, too.
Sherlock Holmes has definitely stayed the test of time, and he's still a big part of pop culture.
Yeah, he is.
He wasn't even the first, like, quote-unquote, detective character that would have been Edgar Allan Poe's Dupin character.
Mm. Well, I mean, there's been several characters that have been around as long, if not longer.
See, Auguste Dupin, I don't know what it is. It's French, so I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Sherlock Holmes has definitely had a lot more versatility than, you know, say, characters like Conan, you know.
Yep.
So
it's far easier to put Sherlock in a modern setting, for instance, than Conan, which
I'd
cannot
love to see
work.
Conan in a modern setting.
Modern Conan would be bizarre.
A sports player.
Crocodile Dundee, maybe?
A little worse than Crocodile.
That was more Doc Savage.
More people would die.
Yeah. More but heads cut off.
Conan. Such a lovable scamp.
I hope he had better luck than John Carter of Mars did.
Well, that was a weird movie, but
That being said, thanks for joining us through our insane ramblings and technical difficulties, and thanks for coming back after our, like, 5 or 6 week delay.
Yeah.
We'll see you here next week.
Maybe.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah, unless, like, the AC kicks out again.
Anybody want to do that? Anybody want to do it?
Good night, Elaine.
Good night, Elaine.
Good night, Elaine.
All right, Son of Maddie, all that good jazz. Check us out.
Whatever.
Facebook.
Treat our phone in.
Our Outright Geek.
We're tired.
Find us on Twitter, Tumblr, LinkedIn, G+, whatever.
GeoCities.
You know, MySpace. All those good things, you know.
Go to bed.
Yeah. look for us, I guess, what else is there, all that? GeoCities, MySpace.
GeoCities, what, the archive CD?
Yeah. Yeah, find us on Tinder. Yeah, was it swipe right, swipe left? I don't know.
Is that a thing? Like, I know, like, movies advertise on Tinder. I mean,
really?
Yeah, actually, they do. I think. I don't know.
I have no idea.
She did, Taylor.
Cool, rat.
I just heard somebody's sister is on Tinder.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.